Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's pod, I am joined by Claire Copey, our resident sommelier and expert on all things drinking, and Jackson Myers, the head of production, who has shot, edited, and produced, well, really every single thing on the platform and all the films. We just got back from the James Beard Awards, where incredibly, and I'm still shocked about it, the whole animal won the James Beard against some big heavy hitters like Netflix and Vice Media and other things that were nominated. So we're pretty elated. We're going to have a conversation about the whole animal, and we're also going to talk about Aspen, of which we are covering here in like a few days. The Food & Wine Classic is back. We're putting in IVs right now and getting ourselves ready for the coverage. If you missed last year's coverage, you can watch that on SOM TV right now. It is pretty epic. I want to let all of you know, if you have not seen The Whole Animal, you can watch it right now on SOM TV. SOM TV is 50% off an entire year if you use the code 50OFF, 50 off, at SOMTV.com. It's $25 for an entire year, and I can tell you that is a very, very good deal. All right, you two. It's good to have you on. This is going to be interesting, Claire, because you wanted to talk to us about what the awards were like. And
I do. I'd love to hear about it. I was lucky enough to get to go with you last year, Jason. Jackson, this was your first year, and you've got a 100% success rate at the James Beard Awards. So congratulations on that. Look at you.
Thank you.
And it's a very, very special thing, the James Beard Awards. So Jason, can you tell us a little bit about, give us some background on what the James Beard Foundation is, what the awards are, and what all of that means, the weight it has for our industry?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the James Beard Awards really started as a way to recognize the best restaurants and chefs and things across the United States. And not just the big ones, but regionally. And it was, you know, I think it sort of sits at the top of the heap as far as in the culinary world. I mean, it's thrown around a lot, like it's the Oscars of food. But, you know, I will say it kind of is. And if you are a James Beard Award-winning chef, I promise you, if you've been into a restaurant, you'll see that front and center right when you walk in, because it's a real, real big deal. And the media awards go to recognize things in the culinary space, often food, sometimes wine, other things. And yeah, it is named after a really, really famous chef who helped, I would say, put food in the vernacular, find food into the normal person's language. And along with Julia Childs, James Beard is one of the most famous and important chefs, definitely in America, if not the world, for making it so understood.
It's a crazy experience. It's overwhelming when you get in there. And I mean, that's just the media award. Like you said, that's a whole separate award ceremony from the next night, which is the restaurant awards. So Jackson, coming into this for the very first time, what were you expecting? What was it like to be there?
You know, it was the first time I was there, and fortunately I had a little bit of information given to me by Jason because last year Sparklers, you know, was nominated for a James, as you know, Claire, as the winner of Sparklers season one. It was nominated for a competition award within the James Beard Media Award section. So I had an idea of what to expect, but I didn't really know. I was just excited. I was so excited to see it all go down and like just be in a room with all this talent. You know, there's a bunch of chefs in the room, of course, a bunch of really talented filmmakers as well. But it was, it certainly exceeded expectations for sure once we were there.
Well, I felt, you know, last year, there's a big difference. I mean, Claire, you, myself, the cast of Sparklers, Christina, who produced, we were all there. And it's sort of, I want to say that there was a calmness to me, and I don't mean this in a martyr type way, but I didn't think we were going to win. I don't mean to say like, I felt very comfortable because we were up against Top Chef. We were also up against a show on Netflix, a chocolate competition show. And it sort of felt like, man, it's great to be here. This is just incredible. And I felt calm last year. This year was a little scarier because there was like this possibility we could actually win. I mean, it kind of felt that way. And
what do you think shifted to make it feel that way?
Well, we had a drink before and it really kicked in. No, I think honestly, look, sure. You know, it's always weird to host a podcast and then talk about the stuff that you personally make with people and you care deeply about. So I don't mean this to sound vain, but we worked our ass off on this film. I mean, Whole Animal, I don't see a lot of films that take place in like 6-7 countries over the course of 70 some minutes. And, you know, it was really hard, and there's a lot of stuff that's on the cutting room floor that was hard to make, and we had to make some tough choices. It's got a real score. You know, the art in there is all done by hand. It was a labor of love, and so it kind of felt like that could pay off. I don't know. You know, all the hard work that went into this damn thing sort of felt real at the awards. It kind of did.
And there were three finalists in the end, right? And so it was like, all right, we got a 33% shot of winning this thing.
That's right.
So yes, not those are not bad odds.
Those are good odds. You were still up Netflix, against some heavyweights, Vice, I should say. Yeah. Like, yeah, last year we were up against Top Chef and Netflix, but you were up against Netflix again this year, and you won. And I do remember there being a moment last year where you started to see like this shift in the, like the little guys. Like we saw a few awards being handed out to like smaller publications and smaller organizations and media presences. And it was like, is it possible that maybe things are starting to shift away from the huge, huge platforms, and maybe some of these smaller platforms are getting recognized? So, I mean, huge props to SomTV and to what you two have built, that not only are you recognized and nominated, but you won a damn James Beard Award for this beautiful film.
It feels good. I mean, but it also, like you said, this is a victory kind of, you know, in a strange way, completely for SomTV. I mean, yeah, we made the film, but we made the film for SomTV. This is like one of our biggest, most important, probably the first pure original film we ever released to the platform. And I have to say, like, there is this weird thing with meat, and I've said it before in the podcast. Most people eat it. I totally respect people who don't, but most people eat it. But yet, you don't want to talk about it. And I've said, like, it's kind of like sex in that way. It's like people are all having it, but if you talk about it, holy shit. And meat's kind of the same way. And so we were very nervous putting a film out there that put the concept of meat and how it's prepared and how it's raised and actually see the faces of animals. And then put that out there and see, like, look, are people going to be able to handle this topic and, you know, try to present it in a way that is not negative, but not also, you know, completely and totally propped up in a way that I think a lot of the topic is often done. And so, you know, for that to be recognized, I think is a big thing for people's awareness of cooking and what's going on in the field and all of those things too. It's not just like, oh, we made a great film. It's like people are, I guess, ready to talk about this subject and ready to say, look, I understand that meat is connected to people. I understand these animals were alive. I understand all of the hard things to talk about when you just want to have a piece of bacon. And so that's a victory for that too, because I think there's this cliche that floats around all over the place that everyone's like, I want to know where my food came from. But then when you start talking about it, people are kind of like, all right, well, I didn't want to know that much about where my food. I just wanted to know that, you know, this farm team got my money. And it's like, well, that's different. Because truthfully, meat is a global situation that I think sits at the center of a wheel, and all these spokes kind of come from it, and it needs to be respected. And so that's a victory for that too.
So what was that initial spark for you two then that you decided we need to make a film about this? We need to bring this to the world's attention. What was that moment for you?
Jax, you know, you want to try that?
There was a lot of car rides while we were making the first SOM film, and then sort of starting to contemplate what the second SOM film was going to be. And in that, you know, I mean, the world of wine and food obviously intermesh constantly, right? You can't have one without the other. So we talked a lot about that. And we're going to all these places in Europe and Italy and France and Spain that had a real steep history in butchery, right? In the art of butchery. And it was at a time when butchery was starting to sort of even go away in these places that have like 1,000 years of history of the butcher. We saw all these shuttered butcher shops around, but you know, you can still find the local butcher shop in these small villages throughout Western and Central Europe. And so we just started thinking, like, this is a story that we haven't seen told, at least in a way that we would want to tell it. And we started looking deeper into this lost art of the butcher and how it relates to immigration back in the United States, and how, you know, they took this craft with them when they came over there, and sort of this resurgence in parts of North America in these cities where like the artisan butchers started popping up right around this time that we started contemplating making this film. So it started with that, I would say, Jason. And also, you know, then of course we wanted to tell the story of the chef and the farmer and sort of, you know, how these three people work together to create delicious food.
Yeah. And there's also like, you know, when you're making Somme and into the bottle, and then you're making all these different things that we were working on, traveling from vineyard to vineyard, you're kind of like, why does this wine taste better? Why is this one, you know, why is this more expensive? Why is the story better here? All these different things. And we started looking, you know, you're obviously eating along the way, trying these great regional dishes. And it was kind of the same question of why does this sausage taste 10 times better than any sausage I've ever had? And it's not because it's remote. It's not because you're in Europe. It's not, the reason is it was, there's a, you can trace it back to the person that actually raised the animal and the way they raised the animal and the way their family has raised animals previous generations. And so we sort of became kind of obsessed with that craft, you know, the like all the way to the plate and sort of, you know, as like Jackson said, we sort of just were like, hey, look, no one's told a story about this craftsperson. And we always laughed. Like they always say, like, you know, the first towns ever had like a baker, a butcher, and a candlestick maker. And it's like, well, I've never really seen a film about a butcher. And, you know, films, narrative films like horror movies and thrillers and stuff have taken the word butcher and completely put it in another context, or, you know, historical things that someone calls someone the butcher of this place or something. And it's really unfortunate because that is a job like any other craftsperson. I look at a butcher kind of the way I look at a carpenter or somebody who really understands every piece of wood or every piece of meat they get is going to be totally different, but they have to be able to work with it as a tangible substance and create something out of it. And I just, the more we talked about it and the more we ate, the more it was like, we really need to make this. And I don't think either of us realized how friggin' hard it was going to be to do it in the end. But I think it was an evolution. And, you know, this film, like a lot of documentaries, and if there's anybody who makes documentaries listening to this right now, you know that you have to come up with an idea, but then you have to let the idea steer itself. And sometimes that means a film takes a long time to get it right. And this one took, I don't even want to admit when we first started shooting this.
Well, yeah, talk about the filming a little bit. You talked, because you said it's a 60, 70 minute film. How many years did this take you to film? What was that like?
Well, we weren't filming it only. So we were filming it piece by piece. If we went to Europe, we'd pick up a thing. If we went to South America, we picked up a thing in Argentina. But Jax, I mean, didn't we start shooting this thing in like 2014? Am I wrong?
Yeah, it was about 9 years.
Is it possible this thing was like 9 years?
Yeah, we started. Yeah. I mean, we've made a lot between now and then. And it, you know, hit the back burner a number of times, but we never forgot about it. And we kept sort of whittling away at it throughout those last 9 years.
Yeah. I think with a movie like this, it was just sort of like, you don't give up on it. It's a marathon. And we kind of, Jackson and I have talked long and hard about how every one of these movies we make, it's almost like a marriage. You're going to go through some shitty times and then you come back and you're like more in love than you ever have been. And so I think with this, we just never got a divorce. We refused to give up on the film. And so that's why, like, for this to have won that is, you know, it's almost like, what do they say? Like, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. I mean, this was a squeaky wheel, and it was so nice for it to get the award because it just matters. But again, it's so much bigger than like, ooh, yay, we get to be on a podcast and say we won an award. The real thing is that, like, hopefully, and we truly hope this, I know Jackson does, I know the whole Somme TV team does, is that someone will go and actually have a conversation with a butcher. Because it's one thing for a sommelier to go to a restaurant and be like, talk to a Somme. And it's like, you know, 50% of the time you get someone who's just trying to sell you something. The other 50%, you get someone that's really busy. But you can get that person that gives you a bottle of wine that's $26 that blows your mind. Now, with a butcher, that's kind of like every time you're like, here's my budget. I have $18. I have to feed 4 people. How do I do that? And they're the only person who's going to be able to go, here's this roast. Here's what I would do. I'd cook it low and slow. I would do this, get some onions, get some shallots. For $18, you can feed your family. But then it's also something that's a next level food. So I'm hoping that people will watch the movie and go, ah, shit, I should get out the slow cooker. Or I should approach food different, because that's really what an award like this does, is it puts more eyes on it. And hopefully those eyes then go and, you know, pick up a wooden spoon and get at it, because it's, you know, it just takes time, like this film, low and slow.
Low and slow, slow and low.
It's a good analogy.
It's the most delicious kind, right?
Yeah,
that makes the most tender meat. It changed. I mean, it changed my perspective on meat again. And I grew up with a small family butcher that was, you know, sourcing from local farms, and I got spoiled in that way. But then moving away from that, coming out to LA, and you're getting, you know, the saran wrapped packages of meat at your local grocery store. I'm just like, why am I doing this? It doesn't even taste as good. Like you said, when you get that piece of meat that's an animal that was happy, you can taste that it had a good life. And then getting to the butcher to also, I want to explore the unsung pieces of the animal as well. I think was a huge highlight for this film for me and for a friend of mine who like used to never eat pork. And then she watched the whole animal. She's like, well, maybe there's a way I can go about this and I can eat, you know, like the ear dish, the crispy.
I love it. Like,
she's like, I don't want to eat pork, but I'm going for the ears. But I think it's a huge testament to what you did here with this film, that you're making people rethink the way they eat and want to do it in a more ethical, humane way.
Well, and there's also a hidden thing in the film that's not upfront, but it is definitely a part of the narrative in that, you know, these three-star Michelin restaurants that you go to and you spend, I mean, sometimes over $1,000 per person. I mean, a lot of those dishes are inspired by very simple, plain dishes from very remote places, often in Europe, sometimes in Asia. And these dishes were not created so that, you know, somebody could be awed in a restaurant. They were created because someone had to figure out how to store food, or somebody had to figure out how to feed a lot of people with little, and they didn't waste anything. And so I do love the fine dining experience, but a lot of that is taken from, you know, these very small, you know, ingenuity from places like little villages. And so in this film, every meal we do, because it goes through this imaginary cookbook called The Whole Animal, is kind of the structure of the movie. And every time we go to another chapter, it's a dish or a place or a, and the whole point of that is to show you that these things come from places that are not, you know, three-star Michelin restaurants. They come from a regional place that actually has a story. And so that's the whole goal with this. And hopefully that came across in the film.
Jackson, what was the most delicious piece of meat you had while filming The Whole Animal?
That's a tough question. That is definitely in line with picking your favorite child. But,
top three.
Jackson's children are pieces of meat. This is good.
They're delicious.
They're not, but man, is it hard to pick a favorite here. I mean, you know, when you film something like this, obviously, just like filming the Somme films, you're fortunate enough to get to taste some of the most delicious food, the most delicious wine in the world, you know, when you're not necessarily worthy. So I'm going to put myself in that boat.
Hey, no.
But some of the food that we tasted that was just like, I will never forget, there's a few of them. One of them is, believe it or not, a sausage. And if there's a part in the pig section of this documentary where we're up in Limoges, which is sort of central France, maybe like 2 hours southwest of Paris. And we filmed with, you know, this real no frills farmers and butchers. It was sort of an all in one here. And we filmed them making some sausage right on the spot. And then they asked us if we wanted to sit around for lunch afterwards, and they made some real, real strong French press coffee, which is a weird pairing with sausage. And they gave us some sausage straight from what they had just made. And it was like unforgettable. And part of it's the experience. Part of it's like the wonderful family we got to sit down and eat with. Part of it's that we got to see it being made. But then there is like just this delicious factor that it was so good. I can't even explain it. I don't know. It's like no sausage I've ever had before. The texture, the flavor, it was so simple.
Yeah. One other big thing with that sausage was, and this is, again, we get into the stuff you have to talk about if you're really going to talk about food. You know, the diner might not have to know this, but the chef and the butcher certainly do. When an animal dies and then you process it fast enough, it has not gone into a process called rigor mortis. And before that happens, that's why they age meat, to try to reverse that. But before that sets in, you have something that can only be had within several hours of when an animal dies. And so the meat has to be processed right away, made into a sausage right away. And that, I think, is a big factor in why this is potentially, I think, the best sausage I've personally ever had. And I agree with you, Jackson. I mean, it was...
Yeah, it was so good.
It was so good. But it goes to show there's very few ingredients in it. Some spices, some salt, you know, a casing and the meat. And there really wasn't much to it. And so how something that simple can be the best ever. It's kind of like when you first, you know, first you go to Italy for the first time and you have pasta and you're like, wait a minute, this is just egg, flour, and olive oil? How the hell is this good? It's kind of like that. It's just, it was mind blowing. And I think that sausage was the best sausage I've ever had. Hands down. Yeah. No question.
It was so good. Then there's the lamb and Rioja. Rioja. That's yours. You take this one because that was another just incredible meal. Yeah.
Yeah. So El Torete is a restaurant in Rioja. And Rioja, obviously famous for the wine that they make there. Tempranillo-based, incredible, delicious stuff. It goes with lamb in a way that is just mind-boggling. This is a place where they have done lamb for 4 or 5 generations. We filmed at this restaurant. We show them cooking it. And it is... I don't know how they make it in this wood-fired oven, but it is crispy. It is soft. It is something that I've never... The preparation is incredible, and they just cook it in water, in a bowl of water. And if you are going to go to Europe, and Rioja is within 5 hours of any place you're in, go. Drive there. Go to El Torete. Make sure you get a reservation, because it's not a fancy restaurant. It's just a small one. And they have a very limited amount of these lambs that they do every night. And it is just mind-bogglingly good. Not to mention their wine list is absurd. I think we were drinking Riojas from the 80s, like just no problem and totally affordable. It was, that was the
best. Remember that oven? It was so hard to, hard to describe, but it was so deep. They had a very special tool that they had to use to get the lamb, which was sitting on top of like that. It's basically almost a pie dish, right? Filled just halfway up with water. And then on top of that, so it wasn't submerged in the water, but on top of that sat the lamb. And then they took this. Yeah, exactly.
Kind of, yeah.
But at a very high heat. For a while.
Well, they like built the whole restaurant around this oven because it's like in the guts of the restaurant. So like you walk in, I mean, I imagine that the oven, they built the walls around it almost because I don't know how you'd get it in. It was like a giant.
This was like 13 generations, I think it went to.
It might have been that much. Yeah, it might have been that much. We filmed a lot of the old pictures and stuff in the film, but that was, we argue constantly of where's the best lamb we've ever had. And I think it's like between a very remote part of Patagonia in Chile that Jackson and I have had lamb, and then this. And I think that this may edge out the Chilean lamb by just we're talking about like half a yard here on the football field, but like.
And that Kim Alter really lamb, by the way, is, you can't forget about that either. It was so damn good. And she was, she's a chef in San Francisco, and we filmed with her out actually in Sonoma for this one, but she presented it like 3 different ways to us. And I don't know. It was just so good.
Those lamb croquettes that she made were tremendous. Yeah. That was really, really special.
And she had that like herb brush she made. Remember, she had all these different herbs and she like turned them into a brush and she was just brushing the lamb as it cooked in butter with it. Oh man, it was good.
Yeah, she runs Nightbird, another restaurant that people should go to in San Francisco. I think too, when you get into these like regional places that do these kinds of dishes, they're just unstoppable. But I just want to just call it, I'm going to just kind of call out basically all of Argentina. That place, the rumors and the cliche that their meat is the best in the world is not a joke, man. I mean, Don Julio's a restaurant down there that if you've ever been to Buenos Aires, you've probably heard of. It may have produced the best steak I've ever had in my life. And these little chicharrones and all these other things that they did were just the sweetbreads. I mean, it was Argentina across the board was just one steak after another that was better and better and better and better. And I almost died while I was there from it. So it was incredible. Yeah. Just
truth be told. I feel really magnificent. I feel rotten for you both. You've just experienced
it's a tough life.
Terrible, yes, terrible time making a beautiful film that earned you a very well-deserved award. Congrats again. Just everybody who contributed to the whole animal.
I want to thank my mom who's listened all the way through this.
I do want to say the Flannery's, though. I want to just mention Flannery's because I will say, we had a really great story that at least we thought it was great while we were making this documentary. And there was just something missing, though, from it. And I think the thing that was missing was sort of this generational pass down that, is an important thing when we're talking about lost arts and when we're talking about, recipes and cuisines like that. And I can't remember how Jason was introduced to them, but we ended up filming with Brian Flannery, who's just a renowned butcher in the Bay Area. Incredible, like the best dry aged meat you could possibly find.
The candidate for the best steak in the world, for real. They do.
And when we filmed with him, and we first filmed with him back in like 2014, right? And so his daughter was pretty young at the time. She was still working for him, but not sort of seriously yet. I don't even know if she was an adult.
School.
Yeah. But so a few years later, we were told that Brian's daughter, Katie, was working full-time with them and sort of taking the reins of Flannery Meats. And so we got back in touch. Jason talked to them and convinced them that we needed to film with them one more time or a couple more times. And so we did. And we found this beautiful story of father and daughter sort of passing knowledge and just making some of the best meat on the West Coast together. And I think it just, it put a pin in the project that was so necessary. It made it full for me, at least, that story of their sort of generational pass down.
I'm a big sucker for the father-daughter story. I have daughters. Jackson, you have daughters as well. And this I think that obviously, you know, there's been a lot of that. The Rothschild film that we did on SOM TV is a father-daughter story. This was a father-daughter story. Cup of Salvation, which is coming, is a massive father-daughter story. It's something that I care deeply about. And by the way, I know many of you are waiting for Cup of Salvation who've listened this long. The New York Times article just came out that you should seek out because it blows the lid off of some of the things that we did. Crazy things that we did in this movie. So I can finally say publicly that, you know, that particular movie, I'm just going to jump topics here, Claire, if that's okay.
Go
that
for
particular,
it. Please.
That particular movie, Cup of Salvation, the next SOM film, you know, we filmed in Iran, and that's in the article. And it was very dangerous and wild. And we're going to do another podcast coming up about what we're allowed to tell you that we did. Try to keep the spoilers out, but you should check out the New York Times, an article that came out about cultural identity and wine, and it mostly focuses on SOM Cup of Salvation. So it's a long time coming, but that movie is coming for all of you who've been waiting so patiently.
And it's worth waiting for sure.
Yeah, it's a wild film. Claire, you actually have seen the movie. So
I have, and I can tell you it's worth waiting for. You want these kinds of things to be done right, and if they take a little more time for that, it's well worth the wait.
Yes. Yes,
for sure.
Says the person starring in Ghost of Spring Mountain that I promise will also release someday.
It'll happen.
should we talk about Aspen a little bit?
Yeah, let's turn it over to Aspen.
Okay.
So exciting.
All right, so yeah, it's exciting. It's exhausting. So
yeah,
we're going to the Food and Wine Classic again, which I don't think anyone would argue is the premier food and wine event that happens annually. I mean, it's sort of like, I always think about it in film festival terms. It's kind of like the Cannes Film Festival situation where it's like the one, you know, and then there are many others that are wonderful and great, but this is the one. It's also 14 hours a day of drinking and trying to film and shooting. And Claire, you were there last year. Jackson, you were not there last year. And so just like Correct. You were a virgin to the James Beard Awards, you are a virgin to Aspen Food and Wine, and we're going to take you
gonna
there.
Going to rock your world, baby.
I'm ready for it. Yeah.
We're going to make
a man
out of
you. And this is a special year. It's the 40th year for Food and Wine Classic.
40th year. And so, I mean, I would urge everybody listening to the pod to go check out SOM TV. Claire talks to the person that founded it and tells the entire story of like where this thing came from. We talk to all the SOMs. We show one of the greatest wine cellars in the world at the Little Nell. There's a lot of that. We're going to do a lot more, but Claire is hosting a competition show about sparkling wine, but it's very different than sparklers. This is part of our blind tasting sessions done in a competition show format with some pretty big celebrities involved. I can't name them yet, but that's coming. We'll have a podcast or two coming live from the fest that will go through kind of what we're doing on the ground and how the competition show is going. And that competition show will air very soon on SOM TV, though we haven't shot it yet. We'll shoot it next week or this week, I suppose. I'm excited. Is there anything you two are doing to prepare your bodies and your mind for what we're going to experience in Aspen?
There's nothing you can do to prepare yourself.
Half a bottle of wine a night, you know. A lot of carbohydrates. Yeah.
I will say this year, I'm going to, the second I get into the hotel room, I'm turning that humidifier on. Those hotel rooms come with humidifiers because they know how dry it is for people who don't live at 8,000 feet. And I didn't do that last year. And I woke up feeling like a husked out little corn husk in the morning. I felt like the crypt keeper. I felt like a mummy. It was awful. And I'm going to use my humidifier this year.
You looked great, though. You looked great on camera. I'm excited. A lot of great stuff coming. So We'll do a podcast talking about Cup of Salvation here shortly, and hopefully have some news to share regarding that. We're going to jump into Aspen, so stay tuned to this pod because we're going to have some great guests, really, really great guests. I am so excited to be able to tell you who's going to be on the pod. I can't yet. Well, this is great. It was great talking to you two. I want to say an enormous thank you to the James Beard Foundation for recognizing SOMTV and to everyone else who was nominated. There were some amazing films. If you get a minute, take a look at the list of nominees, all of those cookbooks, all of those films and shows, all of them are there for a reason. They're all really, really, really special and good, and they deserve to be watched, not just the ones that won. So I just want to say thank you to all, and don't forget, SOMTV is 50% off for an entire year. It's $25 for a year. Go to SOMTV.com, type in 50 off, 50OFF, and get that deal, or give it to somebody you love. They will really appreciate it. There's more than just wine there, lots of food stuff.
Same price as a Beaujolais Village. You can do it.
Yeah, that's right. You can get a Beaujolais and a subscription to SOMTV, and you can watch hours of Beaujolais education. Okay, everybody, be safe, and we will talk to you from Aspen very soon, just a few days. All right, take care, all.